Speaking on step three. So if you're new to this meeting, so as we said, Dave's going to be speaking on step three, which is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So Dave, it's all yours.
Thank you very much. Well, it really wasn't that good of a clap. It's like you all had mittens on. There. Nerve-wracking. You people ought to be up, you know, wow, this guy's something. Listen, congratulations to the birthday celebrants. I'm glad you're here. And although the prerequisite for this, I guess, is that you have to have 30 plus years of sobriety, Kevin will start asking you next week to do it. He'll wait you out. And take a look at him. He's 150 years old already. So let's face it, he's going to outlive us all. He already has. Again, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
A deeply grateful alcoholic and deeply grateful to be here. Thankful to and knowing it's an honor and a privilege to address a group of folks about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think I'm going to break for questions. Listen, I have taken it upon myself as part of my study prior to coming here to listen to other people. I haven't got you yet, Mary, I'll get you. But I've been kind of bouncing around listening to people. So today I listened to the president of AA, Buzz Green, and he's doing the third step. Does about 15 minutes and said, "Let's have some questions." I didn't think that was allowed, but because you're the president, apparently it is allowed. Anyway, thank you for having me. I'll try not to go over. It's one of the cardinal sins of AA is to one, expect that people are going to be happy to see you, and two, when it is your turn to talk, you talk too much, which has never been my problem. I'm looking for Jane on this thing. She will usually make some comment about that. Anyway, step three. I made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God so we understood it, or understood him. Remember, everybody talks about the three frogs on the log. Anybody do the Joe McHugh? And it shows up and people use it when they're talking to their sponsees, and they said, "Hey, there's three frogs on the log." Well, personally, I don't like it much, but I. So there's three frogs on the log. I'm going to say it anyway. You're going to have to put up with it. It's like time takes time. I'm going to talk about it anyway. So I'm new at this program, then, and somebody says, "You know, this is just a decision you have to make." Honestly, that doesn't. You know, a decision and action were not a separate concept to me. They weren't. Three frogs on the log meant three frogs on the log and one jumped off. There's two. Now, I was never very good at simple math, much less, you know, algebra. I think that's algebra. So I said two, and the guy that was going through the steps with me said, No, you only have three because you only made a decision. And I'm going to be honest with you, it confused the heck out of me to say that I was going to make a decision about something, but yet not have that there's automatically action to decisions. That was my premise. And there's not. And not in AA. There's not. But I thought so I was a little bit confused by it. So in the rehab, and the rehab wants us to have a full grasp of the first three steps before we leave. And I mean, I read all 12 of them. I mean, I don't know how, but they get us together, and this will mean something to some of you. One of the techs was a guy named Max Kaler, and Max Kaler called everybody cement head. I didn't know Max Kaler from a bag of hammers, but he was a pretty good dude, and he'd been sober a long time, which, you know, anything over 12 weeks was pretty long to me anyway, but Max had been around a while, and he had had a harder life than I had lived, And he had a tendency to call every one of us the same thing. It didn't matter what ditch you might have drug yourself out of. You were a cement head. You couldn't learn anything. So I'm in a room with Max Cement Head Kaler, who is long gone, but great guy. And one of the people that was, one of the professional workers there. And so they're going to do my discharge planning for me. And so they said, have you come to an understanding of the first three steps? And I said, well, what's there to understand? I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I'd been there for 30 days, but I still was grasping at the idea of whether I was a drunk or not. And I said purposely, ignorantly, I said, no, I don't get it at all, because I wasn't going to give them any kind of help. I was going to make them go through this discharge planning as painfully as possible. And trust me, by the looks on their faces, it was a painful ordeal. I was not missed at Serenity when I finally left. So as I am having a conversation with them about how it is I'm going to get to the third step, they said, well, listen, in our discharge planning, we are going to recommend that you also take antabuse. Now, for those of you who know what antabuse is, it was an oral. They don't use it much anymore that I know of, but it was a pill that they would give you daily, or you were to take daily, which would make you violently ill if you drank. Now, there's probably somebody in here that said, well, I'll take the pill and drink anyway. It wasn't me. And what I said was, no, I'm not taking that pill. What if I want to get drunk? That's going to be painful, right? That'll not happen. But that's not what I said. What I said was, I think that's a crutch. And I don't need a crutch in my recovery. You people, I'm going to stay sober out of spite to Max Kaler calling me a cement head, if nothing else. There was a lot of other people there I didn't like too, who I thought could have been doing a better job. And they weren't. So for whatever it's worth, that's my first introduction to step three. Now, keep in mind that was a while ago. And I haven't done this yet, and I hear people say this. My sobriety date is November 30th, 1989. So that means I've been sober 33 years and whatever. So I qualify by saying I drank too much for too long. I did foolish things. I did dangerous things. I hurt other people. But that wouldn't be anything unusual for anybody in here to say. I could tell you a million stories that you already know because you already did it. Or you did one better or you did one worse. So I got here. I didn't want to be here. And now they want me to do a couple things. So we're already in the third step, right? So, I mean, come on, slow down here. There's 12 of them, you know? Oh, you could always find somebody that could sponsor you. Said, listen, we're going to go through one step a year. Wow. Wow, that is some lazy, lazy recovery. One step a year. Of course, I was doing none, so that was even lazier. So, the first step, as I've said, was not terribly difficult for me to understand. I mean, my life was completely unmanageable. I mean, it only took me about a week away from drinking to think, ooh, I said some pretty stupid things there. Now, I still say stupid things, but I'm usually cognizant of it, and if I'm not, people's faces will usually tell me that was over the line. And then if it's a group this size, I begin one at a time. I'm sorry. As it is, the powerlessness, of course, is what I said I have to sit in. So the next thing we come against is a power greater than self. So I have no power. They're going to give me power. And the power was that I had to come to believe in it, right? And I thought, oh, man, this is a tough thing. But I didn't think it was too tough when I got to step three, when I had to turn my will in my life over to the care of God as I understood him. Well, first of all, I have no conception of a God. I mean, I have a faith. And I said this as I was practicing to myself. I wonder how I should approach this. And here's the approach. If I was questioned about whether or not I was Christian or not, I would say yes. Because the faith that I have has a lot of the tenets of Christianity in part of it. Am I an evangelical? No. And I don't think that my faith or my religion or the God of my understanding expects me to do some of the things that I've seen people do, say, and witness to. But that's what the beauty of this program is. It's the God of my understanding. It's not the God of the Lutheran understanding, which, by the way, pretty mild. But it's also not the God of the understanding of the Southern Baptists. A little bit different. Or the rituals and dogma that we all appreciate from the Catholics. Don't know anything about them. Their priests dress well. They dress well. And their nuns don't. Their nuns don't. There's nothing fetching about those outfits. But for whatever it's worth, I had no, and still to this day have no, real background or understanding of religion. And I've said this in the first two times that I spoke, I'll say it again. They're probably going to track it, see if I say it all 12 of them. Just because I know they're doing that, I'm going to. So this week I'm going to say, I really don't have a religion, but I really appreciate and am jealous of people who do. Because I think they learned something I didn't at a very early age. They learned some humility. They could stay right-sized in a different way. I didn't learn that. I got here and I didn't have the conceptions. I get the idea. I think I'm smart enough to figure out that I can figure out what words mean and how they're placed in a sentence. I'm not so sure that I can understand and grasp what it is that I'm supposed to feel as a result of it. So humility, honesty, you know, are not things that I come by, that I think that people who have a religious background sometimes can say that they did, and that they were taught that. So having a conception about what my God is was kind of a struggle, because I really didn't have the contextual idea of what a higher power was. And I wasn't so sure that I wanted it. I don't know about any of you, and probably none of you, were oppositionally defiant. My guess is none of you said, well, I'm not doing that, once in your whole life. I, on the other hand, did it for everything. It wouldn't have really mattered what you asked me to do. I'm going to whine about it and say, no, I'm not going to do it. And that's the point that I'm trying to make. When I got to the choice of making this, I didn't want to make the choice. Because it was going to inhibit the way that I saw myself. Now remember the hole in the donut thing? You've all remembered, you know, in the book, where it's in the book. Well, it's in the discussion of the third step. Because if I keep giving up all those things that I used to be, then what am I going to be but the hole in the donut? I would have gratefully, 2 years later, been the hole in the donut. Because those first 2 years of recovery were so mystifying to me, and especially the first year. And first of all, I was angry, I was frustrated, I was depressed, I was divorced. I didn't start that way, I ended that way. Not that was her fault, that was mine. That was Budweiser's fault. I call that the Budweiser divorce. But I was driven by ego. I was driven by self-centered, the selfishness, all those things that they talk about in the Self-Will Run Riot. Boy, when you say that real fast, it sounds like it all means one thing, you know. I had to break that down too. Self-will runs riot. Because I thought, what's self-will run riot? Because comes tripping off the tongue, but it didn't really make any sense to me. But it took a while for me to break it down. That my life was running riot because of self-will. And my inability to accept or even try to accept a power greater than myself. Again, I have a faith that I'm very, very comfortable with. Much more today than I was then. I have a higher power today that for no other reason than except that it's something I understand is the Judeo-Christian God. It's the thing that I know understand. And what I will reach back for. Because I can't do this alone. And when I discovered I couldn't do it alone, I had to have something and somebody to help me through this whole process. But I didn't come to the third step on the wings of victory. I really didn't. I come there thinking, I don't know what this means. And please help me. In the meantime, remember, I'm trying to not drink every day. You know, that's really the struggle. Can I do this and not take a drink every day? And I did only because I went to a meeting every single day, or at least seemingly every single day. For almost 2 years, I had to, because one, I wasn't an alcoholic, but if I didn't go to a meeting, I would probably get drunk. I don't know. Sound logical to me at the time. It really did. Made a lot of sense to me at the time. So eventually I have to settle into something, don't I? I don't get to stand here a number of years later without finding a higher power. That's it. I said it last week. This is a spiritual program. I talk about with guys that I've sponsored over the years and say, listen, the very first thing we got to do is determine whether or not you have a power greater than yourself, because it is absolutely essential for it to work in AA. That might not be essential to work in other things. I've had lots of people say, well, I don't like the God thing. Well, go get sober somehow. You know, some other way. It's okay. You know, guys do. They get sober. Eventually they come back and say, that other way sucked. We were allowed to have wine and it didn't work out for me. But the thing about AA is, and I'm sure it applies to everybody in this room, it works. So why don't I not take, after a while anyway, seriously the tenets of this program? So we're on the third step. Can I surrender my will to a power greater than myself the way that I understand it? Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try and understand it first, because I had no understanding, no context, except Sunday school up to about 12 years old. And that's it. And so, what's the higher power to me? Well, I had to sit and think about that. I had to sit, not just think about it, I had to meditate on that. I had to pray about it. Here's the thing it says in step three. The key to this is willingness. Well, I don't really have willingness as part of my vocabulary, especially at that point in my recovery. So someone told me, and I don't remember who all these wonderful people are that, by the way, that have held me up over the years, including all of you, said the key, you know, to willingness in finding it is through prayer. Well, that makes sense if you're looking for a higher power, that you're going to actually pray. But what do you pray for? Pray for willingness. Pray for willingness. Pray for understanding. Pray for that. And maybe, as a result of that, I will come to an understanding and I will have the ability to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. And it worked. It worked. Yeah, I was surprised too. You're all going like, no, it didn't. But it did. It did. I wouldn't be here without it. Honest to God, I wouldn't. It wouldn't have worked. So, okay. So I find willingness. I know that my life is run on self-will. I know that I'm not very good at that. I realize eventually when I get far enough away from the last drink that the idea of me being God is really laughable. Although, you know, like I said before, there's a whole book out there that says not God. And it's really written in the big book. It's written in the 12 and 12. You find it all through our literature. We had to find a power greater than ourselves that was not us. Was not us. I can remember early on thinking, I wonder if God looks like me. But now I hope not. I hope not. I don't want there to be any reason for people not to show up at the pearly gates. You know, I want them to want to get there. But you see what a struggle that was. And I'm sure I speak for others in that regard. It wasn't like trust me, I'm not unique. I am really, really a garden variety drunk. I really, there's nothing special about this except that I didn't drink and I lived. You know, that's how you stay sober this long. But the learning process didn't begin until I could come to that third step, and so I could apply to the rest of them. So here's the other thing that confused me about the third step. So I'm making this decision. I'm making a decision, but I'm not attaching action to it, right? No, I am attaching the next 9 steps to it. Because that's the decision I'm making. I'm making the decision to go ahead and say yes to the rest of the program. I didn't get that. I don't know. It says it in there. I mean, you read the step and you go like, oh, yeah, I get it. Nope, I didn't get it. Nope. I didn't know what that meant, so I was always fighting the decision thing. I don't get this. There's three frogs in the freaking log, and two of them jump off, and six of them show up, you know. So I really struggled with the idea of this whole thing. And so when I could finally surrender is when that come to pass. And it says in our books, it talks about that surrender paradox. And where, you know, that's the fight, right? It's the powerlessness surrender. It's the surrender to a God that you understand. And having the willingness to do it. That's so hard. In my way of thinking, it just was something I had to struggle with. So, anyway, I get to a point where I feel like I can go on to the fourth step, and we'll talk about that next week. I was wrong, just so you know. I'll give you a little preview. I was not ready for the fourth step when I did it the first time. As much as Max knew that I needed an abuse, which I am grateful I didn't take a drink and I didn't take any an abuse, but it was always an option, and I never saw it as an option. I saw it as a punishment because everything was against me. Poor Dave, I really had her pretty tough. You know, I look back on this thing now, having a God in my life and keeping it part of the action of what I'm trying to do. Like I said, I want to do the next. And I have the. Here's what I'll tell you. I go to a therapist because I needed to, and she said go back to AA because I needed to, and then I said something one time. I said, you know, I have a really good life. She has, you have a blessed life. And I never thought about it that way because my connection wasn't immediately to a higher power. My connection was, how do I feel about Dave? And when it connected to a higher power, I thought, oh yeah. And I've never thought differently since. The blessings in my life are manyfold. I don't know about anybody else. I assume that you got in here, people prayed you in here, and when you got here, you know, hundreds of hands held you up. I don't know about you, but that's what happened to me. Otherwise, I can't stay here. I have to leave. Because I don't have the wherewithal to do it by myself. So there I am. I've now reached a part where I now have this blessing, this life of comfort, basically. First world problems. I mean, I live in a country that is overabundant, and I got no reason to complain. I had a great career. I got to retire at 64 years old, actually at 56, but I went back to work just because I liked it so much. And truthfully, I did. I loved working because my work was fun. It was interesting. It was with nice people. And what a blessing. You know, I had family members support me, and they didn't know they were supporting me. And I had tragedy. My son died 7.5 years ago, and he died of this disease. And what I discovered is the power greater than myself brought me through that. I miss him every day, and I think of him every day. But he was killing himself, and I knew it. I couldn't stop it. So I had to be okay with the idea that I don't think that that he'll outlive me, and he did not. And it's tragic and unfortunate and breaks my heart, but I don't get to stand here without this program. I don't get past that and say it's okay, because it is okay. It's never going to be okay, you know what I mean. But because this program and a power greater than myself, I could accept it. I put the weapons down. I surrender to that paradox. So the more I'm dependent upon the power greater than myself, the more independence that I have. I would not wish that on anybody, but I will tell you, it is a defining moment in your life when you can come upon this and know you're going to get through it. And that's not to say that a whole bunch of you haven't had tragedy in your life. You all have. And I assume that my experience with this is the same as everybody else's. That God, or your perception of God and your understanding of God, brought you through to the light. Brought you through and said, you know what, it's going to be okay, whether you think so or not. And I had people in this program tell me that. I had, unbeknownst to it, people in this program telling me that. You know, I went to meetings and they were exactly what I needed to hear. That's probably never happened to anybody in here, right? No, that's what I thought. So you show up and suit up, and all of a sudden something wonderful happens. And it starts right here. Starts right here. I mean, those first two steps are reflective, aren't they? I mean, we're thinking, well, let's go ahead with this and say, we're going to think about powerlessness, and we're going to see how that controls everything right down to step 12. And we're going to think about coming to believe in something. They're reflective steps. And obviously, there's a lot of belief in it. But in this third one, this is the first action. This is shooting out of the gate. This is coming to where we want to be, right? It's where we would think that this AA program might actually work. Because in the first two steps, I wasn't so sure that it was actually going to work. And frankly, I didn't think it was going to work the first 2 years anyway. Because I was not paying attention. And it come as a huge surprise to me. And I said last week about what my step two moment was. And it was overwhelming to me. And then I understood. I understood. I was 2 years sober or thereabouts. And all of a sudden, something grand happened to me. Now, I put it all aside. I tried to sponsor myself. I made my life a living misery because I could. Nobody was stopping me. Nobody was feeling sorry for me for being a crybaby. And I knew that when I got sober, that probably the day that I knew that was going to happen was the day I couldn't get anybody else to feel sorry for me. That's a tough day. There's nobody left to feel sorry for me. Tough day. What's the last address on the block? It's AA, man. This is where I got it. This is where I got to. And I only did that by traveling the same path hopefully all of you are traveling, which is it's the wide road that they talk about that's all-inclusive. Or it's you're trudging, just that beautiful word that trips off your, like Skip Kamaloo, trudging the road of happy destiny. Makes you really want to jump into it, right? You know, when I think about trudging, I think about going ankle deep, pitching manure. You know, I got to trudge out of it, you know. But that's not what Bill meant. He meant the happy destiny part of it. But it starts here. There's a lot more steps. There's a lot more, but they're all action. Well, pretty much. But this is the first one. And this is the one that gets us started. And it's the one that eventually turned me on. It's the one that started the fire. It's the one that I finally was safe in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was with people that I didn't have to explain my life to anymore. Even though I wish they would ask me, because I sure wanted to talk about myself. So I haven't referred to my notes much, so let's take a look at something. I'm not going to read you the third step prayer. I really hope you know it. Well, I hope you know where to find it. It's in the third step. Did you notice, and this I heard in a lead one time, do you notice there's not an amen at the end of it? There's no amen at the end of the third step prayer. But there is an amen at the end of the seventh step prayer. That's always interesting to me. And I thought, well, you know, one completes the other. And it made sense to me. So I rely on the third step prayer. I've told people, including some people in here, that when you are struggling with something, what I have done and done repeatedly is say four prayers. I always do the Serenity Prayer, but not the little prayer. I say the whole thing. I have to read it because I can't remember anything. I say the third step prayer. I read the seventh step prayer, and I read the 11th step prayer. And one of the guys I said this, it said, does that work? And I said, well, if it doesn't, do it again. Just keep doing it. Because it worked for me, it'll work for you. I couldn't got that without that third step. I couldn't have even begun the idea of what I'm going to get in the 11th step. I'm not going to get a conscious contact without having the third step. I can't get any of this. They're in a line for a reason. And next week I'm going to talk about two steps. So plan on being here 2 hours because I think you people need a lot of help. I really do. I'm done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave. Okay, it's on. So now we have time for questions. If you have a question for Dave, go ahead and raise your hand. We'll bring you the microphone. And if you're on Zoom, go ahead and speak up when you get the opportunity.
Hello, Dave. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
Thanks for a very entertaining third step presentation. I love the way you show laughter, and you're having fun at the same time of driving home your step. The question I have, the first three steps, did you have opportunity to use those on your trek with the Appalachian Trail?
Absolutely, man. I used every one of those steps on the Appalachian Trail. But talk about being inside your head and as you well know, if you go on a lengthy hike, you're going to be inside your head maybe for a dangerous period of time. And so, every one of those things would have occurred to me. And prayer is part of my life. And I hesitate to say that meditation is because it's not. And I blame that on the tinnitus I have. And every time I try to get quiet, it sounds like I have an audience in my head. Truthfully, I'm just lazy. I can't. But I pray because I know that nothing gets done without prayer. So absolutely, Bruce. And thank you for the question. So thank you.
Who else has a question?
Hello there, Dave.
Hey, Helen.
I have an observation and a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Is someone talking in the room?
Sorry?
Is there someone talking in the room?
No, it's just you listening to yourself.
Okay. Okay, back to your decision. And of course the frog thing. Frogs, by the way, are not algebra, they're arithmetic.
How the heck would you know, Helen?
Anyhow, my question is a serious one, though. What did you think a decision was when you were struggling back then?
The specific decision or any decision?
Any decision.
Here's what I thought about most decisions. I'm not making them. That's the truth. I was afraid to make decisions. I was afraid of my shadow. I just didn't know it. I was entirely removed from decision making. By the way, it was part of my job. I was supposed to do that as a regular part of what I did. And I didn't make decisions. So living in limbo in the early part of that was very easy for me to do in regards to not making a decision. The hard thing to do for me, honestly, was come to terms with the fact that I had to make decisions. I was a full-grown adult with a job. So thank you for the question, but the truth of it is I didn't make a decision because I was more comfortable not making a decision, and then I could whine about the one you made for me and tell you how wrong it was. But probably not you, probably everybody around you. Thank you, Helen.
Hi, Dave. Doug, alcoholic.
Hey, Doug.
Appreciate your talk today.
Jeez, it's good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
Yeah, make this easy.
So I was wondering, the decision,
yes.
Would you just describe that as a process, or when
yes.
you think back, how long do you think that took?
How long did it take me to make the decision, or to
are
process
still,
it?
Are you still in that process now?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know that I don't engage in the third step from time to time. That's the thing about self-will. It is exactly that, self-will. Do I re-grasp it? Yeah. Does it get its bit in its teeth and run? You betcha. So yeah, it's a process that hopefully I don't say something really awful to somebody, so that now I'm at the 10th step already, or worse yet, the 5th, or the 8th and 9th. But yeah, no, it's self-will is exactly it. It says in our book, there's two types of will, self-will and God's will. If I can conform to God's will, and self-will never can correct self-will. That's what our book says. That's what our literature says. But I don't know anybody, but it might be all of you, who've never had a moment when you've recaptured self-will. That's something I have done regularly, unfortunately, probably daily. Clearly, I did it daily when I worked. Today, self-will is not the same thing in that regard because I don't worry about that part. But my dog is stubborn and he's a pain in the butt. So yeah, there are times when his will and my will do not coincide and we both need God's will. But that's a different reality that I have today. But that's a good question, though. I really have to be aware that I will reintroduce self-will into my life if I think it's convenient for me. And then I have to fight the temptation, because in the end of that, I get self-righteous indignation. Anybody have that? Man, that's a great thing, isn't it? That's like riding the fastest horse on the track, just whipping that thing into a froth. You know, self-righteous indignation is just like, oh, I told you, you son of a gun. Of course, you do it with a smile on your face. That never happens to me now.
Hi everyone, Gretchen Alcoholic.
Hey Gretchen.
So let's get away from the frogs and the decision.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So only being at the third step, what was it that helped you to identify the difference between your will and not your will?
Good question, because in prayer they tell us to listen for that still small voice, which sounded like me. And I thought, that probably isn't the right one. But that's a great question, because I want to believe that I have a connection and a conscious contact with a power greater than myself. And I want to believe, now, that come later, obviously. But at that point, man, that's a tough journey, because I still wanted things. You know, I wanted things. I didn't realize that my life was going to have these blessings where things were, can I help you? Or can I come to your house and mow your grass if you can't do it? I didn't know that those were the things I really wanted, and that's the things I want now. But early on, I wanted God to want me to have things. Like, you know, my house paid for. My second divorce to go through quicker. Those were the things I was really working at. And so it took a while, and you know, I'm still working on it, you know? So thank you for the question. It's a good question. All these questions are good. Thank you.
Jim, alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
Hi, Jim.
So, the care of God as we understood him. So, it says that deep inside every one of us is the fundamental concept of a God.
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody believes that or not, but as you know,
AA tells us that.
That's right. I believe that. But anyways, so coming into AA and to the third step, and you don't have an understanding of a God.
No.
So how did you kind of find that God as you understood him, or how do you help somebody that's just, and maybe somebody that doesn't have like no religious upbringing at all, no nothing,
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
It's a little bit easier, but
no, anyways, I don't know,
but if struggling with that yeah. power thing, anything that yeah. like what made it click for you?
Well, I is that it, Jim? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. What made it click for me was I saw results of prayer. I saw things actually work out. Things that I wouldn't have expected to work out. And there's some really simple things. You know, like something showing up at my door that I didn't know was going to be there, that I needed, to someone saying something in a meeting that I absolutely had to hear. Or things that are a little bit beyond that. I took another job and I really wasn't prepared for it. And so I had to have a meeting with a whole bunch of people I didn't really know, and I didn't really know what my job was. But you might have suspected I have a little bit of BS in the blarney, the Irish would call it. And so I remember going outside and saying prayer that I not, that I'd be able to communicate what it is I thought. I mean, I had a general concept. I went back in there and said a bunch of stuff I didn't know. I didn't. That's the kind of God that I have. That doesn't necessarily put words in my mouth, but helps me through these rough patches. I don't know how I got there, Jim. It was a faith that I didn't have until I had it. And when I learned that in prayer I could get, not what I needed, or wanted, I should say, but what I needed, it worked. I do it today. I did it before this meeting started. I did it while this meeting was going on. I'm going to pray and ask God for help, and he's going to have to say no, because he might. Because remember, there's more than one answer to a prayer, and one of them's no. And I usually think, no, that's probably about whether or not I win the lottery. That's always going to be no, especially since I never play it. But you see what I mean. The faith didn't come easy, but once I settled into the groove of understanding how to get there, it doesn't surprise me when things work out. It also doesn't surprise me when things don't, because they're not going to every time. And we don't get to live a life without challenges or without pain or without anguish, without grief. We don't. None of us do. None of us get out of here alive. And we have to be willing to understand that and to help others through whatever trials and tribulations they may have. And the reason I would say that, it's not as though you don't do it. I didn't do it until I understood it. And that's where prayer took me. It took me to, I can help. I actually can help. And sometimes that means just shutting up, which, by the way, hard thing to do. So, anyway, thanks for the question, Jimmy.
Who else has a question for Dave? Anyone on Zoom?
Oh, come on, Jane. What do you got to say?
The volume's off.
Yeah, you got to unmute your...
If you can tell I'm in a different place, I'm Jane Alcoholic. And the reason being is I'm in my kitchen. In case I have to spend the night, I can wake up. I'll be here to have breakfast.
Aren't you the funny one?
That's all I have.
Thank you for the question, as always, Jane.
Sure.
Yeah. And she's a sweetheart. She's busting my chops all the time. So.
Hi, Dave.
Kevin.
An alcoholic?
Yeah.
So, you're doing the third step. You're taking, when you're working with somebody, and you've taken them through the first couple, and now you're at the third step. Yeah. Have you ever sponsored somebody that was like yourself?
Well, yeah, but not for long, usually. Not sure I'd like that guy. I'm honest to God, I was saying this to Jim before the meeting started, that in the very first year of sobriety, and I'm in a meeting like I was every night, and I was down in Edinburgh, and a guy come in, he was new in the program, and I didn't like him at all. And it was a spot it, you got it thing. I'm sure it was. I'm sure that what I was seeing was a reflection of myself. And I did not like it. And so I went to a guy that had some time. He's an old timer. And I said, hey, man, I know in AA, you're supposed to like everybody. But I really don't like Fred. Oh, sorry, Fred. It wasn't Fred.
It wasn't Fred. Okay.
And he looked at me and said, what makes you think everybody likes you? It's Tom Cum. You remember Tom Cum. Tom Cum, and he taught me a lesson that I've carried now for 32 plus years. Did I wish myself on anybody else? No. I was my own sponsor for a while. Not a good one. I've been fired by a sponsor. I guess I had it coming. And I've switched sponsors because I thought we were going in different directions. Have I sponsored people that were like me? I don't know. I honestly, the conversations change dramatically when it's one-on-one, and we're really just talking about how do we get from I am miserable, I am carrying this despair, I'm afraid of life, I'm afraid of death, I'm afraid of everything, to I can live happy, joyous, and free in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Greatest thing in the world, isn't it? To watch somebody come to that realization, to stand here long enough to know that people are going to get there too. Wow. And they're going to have first world problems even though they thought that it was the end of the world. Nah. It's a good life. It's a good life. Anybody else? Listen, thank you. Thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you, Dave.